Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and welcome to another episode of the Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone in the entertainment world. My guest today is a vocalist, but one with a very unique background. It is my great pleasure to welcome Paul D'Adamo to the program. Paul, did I just ruin your name?
No, actually, Simon, you you did fine, absolutely fine. Thank you so much.
I'm going to try and avoid using your last name as much as I can, because I know I will get it wrong. But let's start with some background. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, for as long as I can remember, from the time I was very, very young, I've always been influenced by music. And I think by the time I was about 6 years old, I had seen Frank Sinatra on the Johnny Carson show. And I kind of had decided that that's who I wanted to be when I grew up. I just really enjoyed listening to Sinatra, just in, you know, just the way he phrased. And at 6 years old, I didn't know what phrasing or embellishments were, but, you know, there was just something about him that, you know, I gravitated to. And I was very blessed to have a family, a brother and a mother and a father, that were constantly encouraging and trying to develop talent in me as best as they could, and, you know, obviously kind of pushing me in that direction. So me becoming a musician, I think I have to thank Frank Sinatra before I thank anybody. So that was the reason, really. So, you know, and then I started lessons, and, you know, vocal lessons and piano lessons, and, you know, from a very young age. And my brother came back from college. My brother's 8 years older than me, and came back with a Genesis album entitled Abacab. And I remember the first track that I had heard. I was probably maybe 12 or 13 years old, and I was hooked after hearing No Reply at All, because I really enjoyed the Earth, Wind, and Fire horn section. And, you know, I mean, of course, being classically trained, you know, throughout high school and throughout college, and then going to college for music, starting off working, you know, at Indiana University and doing some work at the Juilliard School, and now doing some work at the Berklee College of Music, it was kind of shunned upon in my household that all of a sudden I was going away from being the classical musician to all of a sudden gravitating to progressive rock and other bands like Steely Dan and Earth, Wind, and Fire, and, you know, other things other than what my parents thought I should have been doing at the time.
Were your parents also musicians?
My father played by ear. He played organ by ear. And I can remember some of the fondest memories I had as a child, a very young child, is my father sitting at the Wurlitzer organ in our living room in Harrison, New York, and playing Tie a Yellow Ribbon Round the Old Oak Tree, and me learning to sing that. And then he also had a thing about playing show tunes from Oklahoma. So it was always, you know, and I always enjoyed watching him play, you know, the double manual, you know, organ and using the pedals at the same time. I thought it was something that, you know, was amazing to watch. And that's really, my mother not so much. I mean, she was kind of the stage mom, taking me to auditions in New York City when I was a kid for Broadway shows and things of that nature. But my father was definitely the one that saw that I had something and that I should kind of pursue it. So in that regard, I was very blessed that my family didn't think that I should become a doctor or a lawyer. My father was in the arts. He was a photographer. That was his career. He was a wedding and a fine portraiture photographer. And so I think, you know, from that perspective, he thought it would be great if, you know, one of his sons would pursue something in that department, in the fine arts department. So They were always very encouraging. All of my family was extremely encouraging. I was very blessed in that regard.
You know, I have interviewed hundreds of musicians, but this has to be the first time that I have ever spoken to anyone that grew up with a father that had a Wurlitzer at home.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, and he couldn't read a note of music. I remember as I was getting more progressive in piano lessons, he would come to me and you know, what's this? And, you know, how do you play this? And what does this mean? And, you know, I grew up having my dad from the time I was two, three years old, really kind of being my biggest fan up until the day he passed away, as always being my teacher and my coach in that regard. And, you know, he loved that organ. He really, really loved that organ. And we kept the organ even after they, you know, my parents sacrificed and got me a baby grand piano to work on. So, you know, he just, and even when they retired to Florida while he was still living, that was one of the first things that they had purchased and put in their home was a Wurlitzer organ. So, you know. It's funny how things come full circle in life, you know?
I just love it. So, you know, what is your favorite weapon to play? You know, is it the keyboards?
You know, that's a tough thing. I always kind of think of myself as a vocalist first and keyboardist and drummer second and third. And it's funny because, you know, here, even though I'm from New York, I currently reside right outside of Dallas, Texas. And, you know, it's funny how I get calls to do different things that I never would expect that I would get calls to do as a musician. So I think, you know, my biggest weapon or where my most versatility would be as a vocalist and then as a keyboardist. I think that's what I enjoy doing most is that communication that I would have with an audience as a vocalist and to be able to interact and kind of, you know, give some emotion to.
I'm guessing here. I see a caller on the switchboard, and I'm guessing that it might be someone you know. Is this...
This could turn into This Is Your Life. Who knows?
Right, yeah. Is this Jerry Marotta?
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah. Hello, no, it's not Jerry Marotta, but this is Ron Wise down in Sarasota, Florida.
Hey, Ron, how are you?
Hey, Paul, how are you, sir? I just wanted again on the air to congratulate you in your endeavors and what you've accomplished, your vocal phrasing and your reincarnations of the Genesis music is wonderful and entangled. Every time I listen to it, I just get goosebumps. And Mr. Leland on the bass just carries me away also.
Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure, Paul. I really, really do appreciate it. You've brought a lot back. And
well, thank you very much, Ron.
You're to be respected.
You know, I mean, doing everything on that album, you know, and I'm sure that will that was a good segue, Ron, because I'm sure Simon will wind up playing one of the tracks off of the album, if not Entangled, because it is my favorite Genesis track on that album. You know, to work with Leland Sklar and Chester Thompson and,
yeah,
you know, and Brad Cole and Daryl Sturmer and Alan Burton, who is a dear friend of mine who played the soprano sax solo. It was just a very magical experience, and I was glad that that song was reinterpreted as well as it was. I'm very proud of that piece of work that we did.
You have
a
right
glad
to be, sir. It carried me away when I heard it. It absolutely did, and it still does.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
How are your critters coming along?
Oh, my animals are doing very, very well. And
why don't you tell the audience about your farm?
Well, okay. I kind of have a farm, audience. So For most people who are kind of in my inner circle, most people know that, you know, my family here, we house two ducks, two dogs, two lambs, and we have some horses as well. So it's I think the next thing that I'm going to build after my second album is an ark, and that's really kind of the direction that we're going to be going into is we're going into the Noah's Ark department.
There you go.
Okay.
Thank you for your time, Paul.
Ron, don't go away. Let me guess.
Go ahead.
You're doing this all in New York City.
No, I'm doing this outside of Texas. I'm in Texas. You could never have lambs in your backyard in New York unless you had tons of acreage and lots of money. I mean, having two ducks and two German shepherds and two lambs and a couple of horses, it's quite a feat. The horses don't stay with us. So the horses are, in stables. My property's not that big. But you could never do this in New York City, Simon. Never.
Paul, question. Do you have a studio at the house?
I do, and it's a constant evolution and progress. It takes whatever spare money as comes in, and I was blessed to be working with a venture capitalist that's helping to actually put a top-shelf recording studio in the house, and, I'm proud to say that it is top shelf across the board, and I'm doing projects for other artists other than, I'm doing some keyboard tracks now for John Anderson of Yes. Doing an album which features John Goodsall on guitar, Percy Jones on bass, David Sanchez on keyboards, Kenward Denard on drums, and I'm working with a gentleman by the name of Mark Murdoch, who's also a drummer, who happens to be a good friend of Phil Collins, and I got the call from Tokyo, Japan, if I would be the vocalist on the album. And I have a hard time saying no to anybody in that regard.
I'll tell you what.
Go ahead.
I think it's time to play a track from your new CD, Tell Me Something. And we've mentioned Engaged.
Entangled?
Entangled, whatever. why don't we play it?
Wonderful.
Okay. Sounds great.
When you're asleep, they may show you aerial views of the ground. Freudian slumber, empty of sound. Over the rooftops and houses, lost as it tries to be seen. Fields of incentives covered with green.
Don't be a son.
I personally think that that is a wonderful rendition of the track.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think it was back in 2008. I stumbled across some people call them tribute bands, but it was hardly a tribute band. They decided to, rework Lambs on Broadway.
Right.
They did a fabulous job. It certainly was a tribute to Genesis, but, not a tribute band. Is that the way you view your work?
Absolutely. The thing is this, is people ask me all the time, and I think the word tribute kind of gets tied in with what I've done on Tell Me Something, because there were so many people affiliated with the Genesis and the Phil Collins world, musicians-wise. And I think people looked at me for a long time as a tribute artist. But with the exception of Entangled, because it's not a song, because it has different time signatures, it's not a song that you really can change the form or change the actual arrangement. Everything else that we did as a cover in that regard, from a Phil Collins cover to a Genesis cover, was rearranged and reinterpreted. So I don't sound like Phil. I don't look like Phil.
Let me guess. You've got hair.
No, actually, I don't. I really don't. I really don't. At the age of 44, I try not to hold on to it as anymore. It just goes gracefully. I think people, some people may look at me as a tribute artist, or some people may look at it as if to say he's trying to potentially, cash in. And I don't think it's cashing in or tribute. It's paying homage to people that, from a musical standpoint, were a major inspiration to me. Go ahead.
Very, very difficult music to play. Difficult music to play. Very difficult music to sing and sing right. And your recreations, be that what they may, are fabulous in their own right.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Last week, I talked to someone else involved in a quote tribute unquote situation, Dweezil Zappa.
Right.
We all know who Dweezil is. Yeah,
absolutely.
Right. When I asked him, point blank, are you a tribute band? He said, yes, but tributes to my father.
Right. I think we see a lot more of those bands emerging, strictly because a lot of the great artists of the 20th century are no longer with us. And I think there are a lot of people out there that are determined to listen to good music, and a lot of the artists today, and I have to be really careful on how I say this, but there's a lot of things that are on the radio today that just, to me, and I think to a lot of other people that grew up listening to Genesis and Yes and Steely Dan and Styx and Journey, nothing comes close to what we grew up trying to emulate, either as a vocalist or as an instrumentalist or even as a songwriter. So
real,
I think a lot of the
tribute
bands
with a vocoder or a beatbox.
Yeah,
All right. We have a caller, and I'm guessing it's Jerry.
Oh, okay.
Let's
find out.
See if I'm right.
How are you guys doing that? You're talking. I hear you talking. But
that is Jerry Marotta.
Right. Jerry?
I'm calling in because is this the Simon Collins? Is this Simon Collins?
No, it's not Simon Collins.
It's Josh Gleason.
Jerry, how nice to talk to you. I just saw you pop up on the switchboard.
What did it come up as? Not, it didn't say Jerry, that's for sure.
No. I had to make some wild guesses. But Jerry, how splendid that you could join us.
Well, I'm going to do my best. I haven't been listening in, so I don't know what the hell you're talking about, but
well,
I only just got into my office at the studio, having just bought my son underwear. It was, you know, I had to. That took a little. That took precedence over the being here at the beginning of the radio show.
Well, it's true. That's very important.
My son's Tom was just a tiny bit more important than Paul on the radio.
Just a tiny bit.
let me guess. He's 35 years old.
No, who, Jerry or Jerry's son?
My son. That's just about right. Now, of course, we're not on the radio right now, are we?
Yes, we are.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we were like... 'cause I was listening, and I thought it's like you're talking. I thought this... I don't know what I thought. I thought I'm... You know. Anyway.
This is live now. Everybody needs, you know, everybody knows now, you know, that, you know. See, the great Jerry Marotta, everybody, will go out and buy underwear for his son, too. So.
Okay. So
where are you at in this whole thing? What are you guys doing?
Well, basically, you know, I'm a guest on this radio station, or this blog talk radio right now. And we just played Entangled, and people are calling in, and we're just talking about the album Tell Me Something, and eventually we're going to talk about Roughly Organic for a little bit.
Okay, good.
So,
Jerry, tell me a little about yourself, other than your predilection for buying underwear.
Right. Okay, well, what do you want to know?
Well, let's ask him what he's wearing.
God. Nah, I mean, who is Jerry? What do you play?
My name is Jerry Marotta. I think, I mean, some people may or may not know. I mean, I worked with Peter Gabriel for about 10 years, just post-Genesis, I guess, just after he recorded his first solo record. I think his record was recorded in around 1975, 76. And then I started playing with Peter, you know, to tour that record. And then I remained with him for about 10 years. I did some or all of the next three or four records. And I don't even know. And we did a live record called Peter's Plays Live. But, you know, I was there for those early days, you know, Games Without Frontiers, White Shadow.
Days Without Frontiers.
Without Frontiers. I don't know, Paul, how much you want to give away about this record we're doing together.
Well, I mean, Jerry and I have been working together since November of 2012, and... I've been blessed to have him in my corner as my producer and, you know, as a co-writer on a lot of the stuff that we're doing together. And we're doing a collection of, you know, when Tell Me Something came out in 2011, you know, and I had approached Jerry about the follow-up, you know, we had talked about I convinced him really to try to come full circle because I had done the Phil Collins and the Genesis. Wouldn't it be nice to kind of finish this homage to doing some of Peter's songs as well.
Good choice.
And that's really
I really discouraged him from doing that.
He did. He did. Jerry did. I mean, you know, because
every
song
he would come up, he would bring up, I'd go, oh, why do you want to do that? Why do you want to do that? Why do you want to do that one? Actually, what's funny is, I'm sorry, Paul, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I'm going to interrupt you and just say, it's been so long since I listened to any of that material. Because, I mean, I just don't listen to it. I mean, obviously, why would I listen to it? I mean, it's old material. I don't listen to it. But not that I don't think it's fantastic, but I just don't. But you know, it's actually through Paul that I've actually developed a real even beyond the love and admiration that I have for Peter, more love and admiration for how fantastic. And not just Peter, by the way. I mean, Peter is brilliant. He's brilliant. And he's had a major influence on me as a human being and as a creative person. But, you know, there was Tony Levin, Larry Fast, David Rhodes, John Ellis, John Giblin, Sid McGuinness, Tim Capello. You know, there's a short list of people. It was shorter in the early days and got longer as time has gone by. That were all, you know, very much a part of the making of those records. So that was a real great experience. In any event, so the point being that, for instance, I don't listen to Wallflower. I haven't listened to it in many years, but when, you know, I listened to it, and then we recorded it, and I mean, it's just it's staggering how what a great song that is. So
okay, folks, here's what we're going to do. I need to regroup. We'll come up with some new questions because clearly I'm being ambushed on air. How about we play the title track from Tell Me Something?
Okay.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good one.
That's one of the ones
Alrighty.
I wrote.
Right. Okay.
That's all songs, and they're very good.
Here we go.
Can we still talk?
Well, I thought you tossed my number. When we walked out, you threw away the key. Your walking papers, and now what? You come walking back to me. I'm always the fool left out in the pouring rain, waiting for a sign from you. It never came. You should have must have known that he only kept you round. Lost your glitter, you come on to the next trick you made. He told you that you mean nothing to him anymore. So run back to the man who loves you through it all. Tell me now, tell me how, tell me something. Is you want me to know? Love is blind, love is real, love is one thing. When you feel it with your heart and your soul. Take a look around you. You pay the price for love. Do
great track, by the way.
Oh, thank you. it's so different. You know, it's so funny. I mean, you know, the first album, Tell Me Something, is really kind of a, you know, the catchphrase that I use now to describe it when people ask what genre it is, it's kind of hard because it's really something for everybody. If people like the Steely Dan funk, that's what they'll get with Tell Me Something. If they like the prog, you know, from Genesis, they're going to get that with, you know, songs like Entangled or, you know, or the straight-ahead rock, they're going to get that with a Genesis tune like Like It or Not. If they kind of want that Sinatra-esque kind of saloon song, they're going to get that with Please Don't Ask. So it's really a mishmash from, you know, anything from adult contemporary to progressive rock because, you know, Lord knows that I should be able to try to figure out what type of artist I am, but I haven't yet. So why start now?
Keep trying. You're doing great.
You're still working on it.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yep.
All right, remember me? I'm Jerry. I'm here. I'm still here.
Oh, Jerry. I had not forgotten about you, very much in the similar vein to
Genesis, actually. You know, it's ironically, because, I mean, if you look at what Phil did, look what Genesis did, and then you look at what Genesis did, you know, that period of time when they were doing things like I Can't Dance, you know. And then Phil was doing songs like Can't Hurry Love or True Colors. Remember that? Remember all of that?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I mean, it's actually freaky. Most artists would never do that because you'd think you'd be afraid they were going to alienate their core audience. And then there was Mike and the Mechanics, you know? And so Mike Rutherford did that, and then they had, you know, it's fascinating. They really are an unusual group, and the stuff that they did, all the different kinds of things that they did, it's kind of very similar to what Paul's doing, because he can do more than one thing.
Yes, he can. Oh, that's true.
Oh. All right, let's talk about Genesis just for a second.
Okay.
There is no doubt in my mind that my absolute favorite DVD is Genesis Live from Rome, or, you know.
Oh, their last one. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the light show, the sound, the crowd. I mean, awesome. There are very few bands that can, you know, create that kind of aura anymore. You know, most of the people I talk to, and, you know, they're pretty serious musicians. If they can fill a 200 seat auditorium, but they're doing good. You know, what is it about Genesis that makes them work?
Well, if I were to answer this question first, I think, you know, as things evolve, and Jerry would probably be able to answer the question better because he's much more versed and experienced and known in the industry than I probably ever will be. But, you know, timing of when bands came up, you know, I think had a lot to do with it, you know, in the 70s. And I mean, these guys were just, I mean, they ate, slept, and drank the creative process of what they were doing. I mean, when they did an album, when they wrote, they all went into the same house and lived together and ate together and wrote together. And that's all they did. Whereas I think artists today have a harder time trying to find a lot of that creativity because they can't be just the artist anymore. They have to be their own, you know, because everybody's independent. They have to get their own radio promotion and you know, it's not just creativity anymore. It's the music business as opposed to the business of music. I think back in the day when Genesis was starting out, they weren't aware of the music business. They were just more concerned about the business of music. And
well,
I think
said.
Bands, thank you. I think bands that did that back in the 70s were bands that endured. that succeeded. That, you know, you couldn't imagine seeing a Genesis show and not thinking that the three of them, or five for that matter, if you wanted to include, you know, Steve Hackett and, you know, or Chester Thompson or Bill Bruford when Bill played with him, you couldn't imagine that these people didn't get along so well off stage as they did on stage. And I think that has a lot to do with artists' success. I mean, I know when I go up to Woodstock and I work with Jerry for a week, and I come home, I miss him. From the time he drops me off at the airport, I'm anticipating when I get to go up there again and work with him for a week. And it's, I think the fact that, you know, I've been blessed to be able to work with people that I like and that seem to give me the same in return, I think it comes across in the musicianship. And I think that had a lot to do with it back in the 70s. And I think that's why, you know, Genesis touched so many people, because they could play a 10-minute song and they could play a 3-minute song and have the same impact on a wide variety of audience. That's just my opinion, though.
Right. Any other opinions on this? Huh?
You mean for me?
Yeah.
I forgot what were we talking about? What is it about Genesis that had them endure through so much?
What would you think? What was your reasoning for that?
You know, first of all, I was really not a big Genesis fan in the 70s, because when I got the opportunity to play with Peter Gabriel, A, I did not know who he was. B, I did not know who Genesis was. That's when I started playing with Peter. I didn't know who he was, and I didn't know who Genesis was. I certainly got to know them just after that, and that's back in 1977. I mean, from what I've learned about Genesis, what I know about them, first of all, you know, it's so hard to pinpoint any one particular record. I mean, I love Trick of the Tail. I don't know why, but I just love that record.
That's my favorite record.
And I love Duke. I love Duke. And maybe Duke may not be considered one of their best records, but for me, I love Duke. I mean, I loved what Phil did. They endured. There's something that kept them together. Obviously, when Peter left, it could have been over with. And they had seen people come and go, like Anthony Phillips and Bill Bruford. And they just said that core of the three of them, Phil and Tony and Mike, you know, there's something obviously there that transcends, you know, a working relationship.
All right, Bruford, is this the same one that pops up in Yes?
Yeah, that would be the same Bill Bruford, Yes.
Yeah, it's a drummer, and they even
I was just checking.
I know, because Simon, you've interviewed Rick Wakeman recently, have you not? I mean,
right.
So, you know, yeah. I mean, I think Bruford stayed with a little bit when I think, you know, Phil had seen Chester play with Frank Zappa, or maybe it was Weather Report. I'm not certain which one it was, but I remember, you know, the story of Phil ringing up Chester, and he was so amazed because he had always felt that there was, you know, a good chemistry between the two of them as drummers playing together. And that's something that I think kept Chester coming back for more and keeping him working with Genesis and Phil over the years, is that, you know, he played with, you know, Phil had played with Bruford, you know, and then when Chester came along, he really enjoyed playing with Chester because I guess the two of them played off very, very well off of one another. And you know, I mean, why ruin a good thing?
It's one of the things that absolutely amazes me. You know, the most people think that the music world is, you know, incredibly huge. And yet, you know, when you start poking around, you know, it's quite small. I love prog rock. I always have. And there are a few prog rock people I haven't talked to yet. But yeah, it just seems to be this merry-go-round. Yeah, play here,
well,
play there.
I don't, and I can only imagine how many people could be listening to think about the next comment that I'm going to make. I don't really consider myself a progressive rock artist. Just because I was influenced by that genre of music, I'm influenced by so many other genres of music as well. I mean, you know, there's stuff that, you know, for example, I mean, a great pop tune is a great pop tune. And I don't think anybody can take anything away from that. You know, a great lyric is a great lyric. A great hook is a great hook. And, you know, you may have to wait 15 minutes into a progressive rock song to hear that. And I think as society gets less and less patient, we
most
tend
people
to
don't
want
have
instant,
the patience for that.
Right.
Paul,
we want instant gratification. But, you know, I mean, there's great pop tunes out there that I say, God, you know, if I could have only thought of that chord progression, or if I could only have thought of that melody line or that phrase. You know, so it's, I don't consider, I'll tell you right now, I don't have one Genesis, actually I do right now this week, in my CD changer. I have Wind and Wuthering right now in my CD changer, but, I mean, you know, I'll have Michael McDonald, I'll have Chaka Khan, I'll have Frank Sinatra, I'll have Earth, Wind and Fire, or I'll have Beethoven, or Billy Joel. I think that's probably more of what I listen to now, kind of more the solo artist, rather than the group environment. And I think there's amazing prog rock bands out there now. You know, if I were to listen to a modern-day progressive rock band that's been around for a while, you know, Spock's Beard is something that's a major influence on me. Even Simon Collins and you know, with his new band and Sound
Train
of Contact.
Train.
You know, just a fantastic, you know, I think guys like that take Genesis music to the next level. And so they should. I mean, that's the whole thing about a music revolution, a melodic revolution. I mean, it's constantly changing. It should be constantly being reinvented. You know, working with Jerry on this new album, you know, you listen to a Gabriel version of a song, we don't even listen to it. We know what song we're going to do, and Jerry comes up with these incredible ideas on the fly that I would have never thought of. Never. Never thought of.
Well, that's,
you know,
because
somebody
you're
asked,
gay.
Because I'm not what?
Gay.
Oh, okay. Is that what it is?
You're not gay like me.
Okay. So he's in a mood today.
Much, but when I say something, it has to have some impact.
You know, I mean, bottom line is, I mean, you know, it's the arrangement process is obviously very important to me as a musician, and I've been blessed to work with two exceptional producers, first with Brad Cole and now with Jerry Marotta. And, you know, you learn so much. You know, you come back and you work on things and you obviously try. And then when you have people like Tony Levin on your record,
absolutely,
you know, Trey Gunn, you know, Fuzzy Morse, and whoever else, you know, we all decide is going to be partaking of the next album. And then you have the Daryl Sturmers and, you know, the Leland Sklars and the Luis Contes. You know, you want to, as a musician, as an artist, you want to bring your A game every time. And, you know, Jerry's been a breath of fresh air as a producer because he comes across very, very as a amicable person in that regard that, you know, anybody that would be considering doing an album, you know, I mean, two people that I would recommend would be Jerry Marotta or Brad Cole from that perspective, because those are the two people that I've worked with that obviously I think brought out a very good product in me. And Jerry continues to do so as we work every month together towards the next album.
Okay. Are you up for a caller?
I'm up for a caller. Sure, absolutely.
Someone calling in from area code 214. What's your name and what's your question? Gone quiet.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
We're rapidly running out of time. Uh-oh. someone else apparently wants to try. Caller from 817, you're on the line. What's your name and what's your question?
Yes, hello, Simon and Paul. I hope you're doing great. My name is Ralph, and I have a question for Paul. And I think this is absolutely fantastic music, and he's such a wonderful person. And maybe other listeners may also wonder, is there anything that we, the listeners, could do to make Paul even better known and spread the word? Is there anything that the listeners could do for you, Paul, so that we expand you as a musician?
Well, Ralph, I want to thank you for calling in, and it's a very nice question. You know, I think people have to have a want for this, and I guess just spreading the word, you know, from social media. I mean, you know, it makes it a little bit easier for artists to get recognized because you have things like Google Plus and LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter, whereas bands in the 70s, they didn't have any of that. So I think a lot of that has to do with it. You know, going to CD Baby, you know, or iTunes or Amazon and kind of taking a listen to a few of the tracks, and if you like one, by all means, feel free to support, you know, local artists and, you know, independent artists, and pick up a track of your favorite Genesis song, or maybe, you know, one of mine becomes your favorite song. And all we can do is keep going out and hopefully promoting, you know, Tell Me Something, as well as the new album, you know, and doing it live. And that's, you know, I mean, that's really the next step, is as this next album hopefully gets completed, you know, that we would do a showcase of shows and start really kind of saying, okay, to get out there, we need to be doing this live.
That would be nice.
Yeah, it would be. Yeah. It would be. It's long overdue. So
absolutely.
Actually, that begs the question. You know, what are your plans on playing live? It's one thing fiddling around in the studio where you can edit things 8 ways to Sunday. It's entirely different on the stage. You got one chance. If
right.
you screw it up, you screw it up.
Correct. And I mean, you know, I mean, not every artist is going to have a great show. I was actually blessed last year, a year and a half ago, that I was working with Brad Cole, who, for people who don't know who Brad Cole is, he was worked with many artists like Jerry Murata has, but predominantly he spent 20-some-odd years at the keyboard chair for Phil Collins as a solo artist. And Charlie Morgan, who worked as a drummer with Elton John for about 15, 16 years, as well as the Moody Blues. And we were able to do, you know, a show opening for Ambrosia in Kansas. And I think this particular music definitely transpires to an audience much better live than it does in a studio environment. I don't consider myself a very good studio artist at all. I tend to be very, very scattered in my thought process, and my focus can, you know, because, you know, you go into a recording studio a day and you spend 2 hours recording and 10 hours listening. And that takes a certain discipline, and that takes a certain mindset. And I'm not there yet. You know, that's why I rely on people as brilliant as guys like Jerry Murata, Brad Cole, and to do that for me in a lot of ways.
Okay.
So, but I much prefer to do things live than in the studio. Studio is just something that you want to do and you have to do if you want to get a product out there. So it's something that you definitely have to do, but I would prefer to do live. If it was up to me, I'd be a touring artist for the rest of my life.
I'll never say that. I know several of them. they no longer know what their house looks like.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, in today's market, you know, 15 shows a month for 2 months is considered a tour. Back in the 70s, they toured for 15 months.
And played every Holiday Inn from here to Wichita.
You got it.
Okay, we're rapidly running out of time. I think we ran out of time 30 minutes ago, but you know, never mind. I do want to go around the table and get your final thoughts. Paul, thank you so much for taking part in this program. Got some parting thoughts for us?
I just, I want to thank you, Simon, for inviting me. I want to thank, Glass Onion Promotions for setting this up, my publicist, Billy James, and thank Jerry Murata for calling in, and thank Ron Wise for calling in from Florida and being such great friends and fans and colleagues and enjoying what I'm doing, and hopefully I won't disappoint as the next product comes out.
I can't wait for the next product, which is why I'm going to put the pointer on Jerry. Jerry,
yeah. Are
you expecting something wonderful
from Paul?
No. Next project.
You mean this one that we're working on?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we've already we've got the ball rolling, and I'll tell you what's interesting is Paul, what have we done, like 3 or 4 sessions so far?
Like, actually, like
we've gotten
like,
together a number of times to work on.
Yeah, we've done like 8 sessions together.
8 sessions. Well, then, if that's the case, you have to send me a check, because I'm way, way, way underpaid. But you know what, Simon? What's interesting is we've done, I think we just, the sessions, they're evolving, because we're evolving. And I'm pretty excited about, the last session that we did together, we started writing together. We've started creating, we have an interesting sort of approach to doing that. I mean, I sort of feel like it's a good way to go. And so, and I'm excited. I'm excited about what we're going to do in the future. And, the stuff that we have, like what we've done, Kits of Life, we did Games Without Frontiers, we did Wallflower as well. But Kits of Life and Games Without Frontiers, we put a spin on them.
We're going to go off air in about 5 seconds, so I have to thank you all for taking part, best wishes, in your new endeavors, and I'm sure that we'll talk again soon. So,
thank you.
See you guys.
Take care, Bob.
Bye-bye.
Right. Goodbye, everyone.